The presentation will take the following comments. We will begin with the overview of the CRDP, specifically dealing with the security mandate and structure, the achievements of the CRDP, and the challenges that we're facing, tackle a number of areas. I will show you later on a slide with the development framework of the CRDP. The reason why I'll use that slide and the reason why I didn't use it here is it becomes more relevant later, because it illustrates the challenges that we're faced with as we get these advantages of a boom in the construction industry the way it has never happened before, but that has pertinent challenges that we have to deal with. And unfortunately, these challenges can only be dealt with if we look at the problem holistically. For instance, we need more money to actually do some of these things that are now required in response to this boom. But if we just look at the context of the mandate. The context of the mandate is to provide these benefits within this framework for a total construction delivery capability to achieve South Africa's economic and social growth. Very important, and again, you see bubbles that talk to this when we start talking about the framework. The second bullet point perhaps will contextualize the forecast that we're taking on as CRDP. We're saying that the mandate aims to provide this framework for sustainable growth and empowerment of historically disadvantaged. The focus of the CRDP is for the whole industry, but we are targeting the SMMB, the emerging sector, because that's the sector that does not have enough support to do things on its own. While we may be developing frameworks that apply across the industry, in terms of our initiatives, we need to deliberately target the emerging sector. And then obviously the framework is for global standards of performance and value to clients and society. If we cannot demonstrate value add, people will continue to complain about this entity that they is not adding value. I would like to highlight this dual responsibility of the CRDP. The first arm is to provide an enabling environment, or we act as a developer. In other words, we must assist the stakeholders that participate in the construction industry. And in this particular case, we could talk specifically about the public sector clients as well as contractors, and more so the development sector. But the second one, and here there's work in progress, it's work that we've been doing since the CRDP was actually established. In contrast to the second bullet point, which is to actually be an enforcer of compliance. Now that we have the CRDP requirements that the stakeholders must comply with, we need to make sure that if people are not compliant, we take action. Otherwise, people will never comply, and it will be very difficult to actually regulate the industry. This is now something that is being emphasized by the CRDP, if you like, a change in the direction of focus. We continue supporting where we can, but we also need to make sure that people comply with the legislative requirements that pertain to CRDP and the industry. So we're emphasizing that because it requires a lot of effort and resources to actually do things this way. While in terms of the first bullet point, it's work in progress, we're going to reduce our effort as and when we see that people are beginning to understand what is required. In terms of our structure, obviously we have a board that the CRDP is accountable to. The CEO of the entity reports to the board. We have four core programs, and I'll just go through them. The program managers, when they are introducing themselves, they indicated that which program they are responsible for. But if I might just give a bit of a rundown, and again, because it is important, and this is how the CRDP was set up originally. We may have to change the structure going forward, but there will be a lot of consultation before we can do that, because there are prompts to actually begin to look at perhaps another program. The first one that I would like to talk about is growth and contractor development, which is headed by a program manager. All core programs are actually headed by program manager. Growth and contractor development, that's the program that is responsible for monitoring and identifying gaps in the industry that would need to grow so that we can then respond appropriately. But that's the program program also that is responsible for the rolling out and the establishment of the construction contact centers in the different provinces. We'll talk more about that later on. The contractor development, if we take that one and put it out of the, we have, together with the Department of Public Works, established a framework for the National Contractor Development Program, which aims to assist especially the emerging sector in terms of the various aspects of development in the industry. So that is the one problem. The second one is construction industry performance. In the past, the emphasis on this problem was not as much as it is now. The direction that PRDP is taking is that one of emphasizing knowledge and information. And the information that is coming out of this program, working with industry and other partners, is to actually make sure that we provide information to the industry so that industry can then take appropriate decisions based on the information that is there. So it's not only information that's coming from the industry, but also information that is sitting within the CRDP that is going to be exposed to the industry so that people understand when we have these steps that we're going to talk about later. People understand what the steps mean because we assist in terms of the interpretation of those statistics. And then we have procurement and delivery, which is responsible for procurement reform rollout, the standard for uniformity in our way, standardizing procurement processes in the industry. Construction is a bit of a unique industry in the sense that it's not easy to just become a multi-billionaire overnight. You need to have the right skills, you need to understand what happens in the construction industry. And perhaps that's one of the challenges that we're faced with as the industry. A lot of people expect that the CRDP must have created a black grade 9, for instance, around this time. We cannot create a black grade 9 because it's actually a business decision that would lead to a grade 9 contractor. Big companies have actually gone through processes that would develop them to be where they are. I mean, we can talk about Marine Roberts Group 5, Clinic LTA. Their level of growth to a grade 9 was not just the opportunities that were given, but it's also business decisions that the company must take to decide whether they want to be at that level and operate under risks that are quite unique compared to when they were a smaller company. There's also an element within procurement and delivery program of monitoring the performance of public sector delivery and see what interventions can be provided. And we do actually respond to the gaps that are identified there. And then the registers program, normally referred to as registers, but it is actually the construction registers service, which is responsible for keeping the registers, but not only that, the data base has information that could actually be interpreted by clients, interpreted by contractors for their own needs and requirements. So it's very important to understand that it's not just a database of registered contractors, but it's actually a database that you can customize, get information in the way that you want it. For instance, you may want to see black-owned contractors. When you go to that website, you will actually see or select black-owned contractors and see the statistics coming out, either as a percentage of the total or the different classes of work. You could decide to have youth-owned contractors. You customize it so that it actually shows you the kind of information. We have two active registers at this stage, the register of contractors and the register of projects. And there's another one that's coming on board, the register of consultants in the built environment, called the register of professional service providers. And then obviously we have corporate services and financial management headed by the CFO. My office has another activity that takes place. The communications unit is actually housed within the office of the CEO. I do have other people doing special projects, but I will not go into that. I think it actually clarifies, you know, how we are structured. We basically support the board at an operational level in terms of executing the mandate of the construction industry. If I may quickly run through the achievements, we now sit with more than 65,000 registrations. And I'm saying registrations as opposed to contractors. A single contractor could register in more than one area, for instance, general building, civil engineering, mechanical engineering. So you'll always have number of registrations been more than the number of registered contractors. I think we're sitting on just more than 45,000 contractors. Now, about 50,000 of these contractors are active. Those that are suspended, maybe because they have not submitted their new tax year certificates, they might not have submitted their annual update. And it's always a temporary thing, but we find that there's always a number that would be suspended to be reactivated and submitted. If you compare this to the end of 2006, when we had 27,500 contractors, you can then understand that the register is growing. But I must mention here that we're talking total number of registered as we register. What we are also doing is we're separating grade 1 contractors from the grade 2 to 9 for very good reason. The grade 1 contractors do not contribute meaningfully to the contracting capacity in the country. These are the people that are supposed to be learning about the construction industry. This is where you have your artisans, for instance, who could fix this and that, but they're not running a living system. What we decided to do, as we'll be discussed later, is when we talk about the grade one, we need to focus on development in the area. And I'll demonstrate to you what commitments are coming from industry to try and support people. We are currently sitting with more than 3,000, registrations as opposed to contractors, where contractors have upgraded from one level to another. And about 87% of these are actually black-owned contractors with single or multiple registrations. Again, when we come to this, what we started doing at the CREB, which is interesting, is yes, the system may say we have more than 3,000 upgrades that have happened. But we're now analyzing and saying at what level are these upgrades happening? What is the actual reason for the upgrade? Now, upgrades can be in at least two forms. Some contractors will come and register for a particular grade, go and do work, and then when they finish that, they come and apply for an upgrade with the CNP. That is what we call a normal upgrade. But others may not have submitted the required documents when they apply. For instance, they may qualify for a grade 6 pending the submission of the required documents. So, because we don't reject any application as long as it satisfies the minimum requirement, they may actually be given a grade 1 pending the submission of those documents. And within 3 months, for instance, they may have the documents and come and upgrade. That is not a normal upgrade. Those people would have qualified anyway for a higher grade, but it's only when they submit the right documents that they will get them up. So we're beginning to analyze that so that we get more relevant information that we can use to interpret. We do assessments in general every day. We capture information, but we share that for a weekly assessment committee. That assessment committee speaks every Monday to analyze the batch that has come through to see which contractors actually qualify to be registered and in what way they might reject an application on the basis of a document that is fraudulent or does not actually meet the standard that is required. We take up to 21 working days to register a contractor. Now, the 21 working days are not just there for the purpose of legislation, but it's actually the CREB interrogating various aspects of the application, talking to the clients that the contractor claims to have worked for, checking with the bank if the information that has been submitted is accurate, talking to project managers that were consultants responsible for the project to make sure that we avoid risk exposure. So there are many things that happen within the grade one working day. I'll talk about the grade ones and what we've done with them so that they don't have to wait for the same period of time. And the CREB has been growing phenomenally, I would say, in the last 3 years. Specifically the register of contractors. That led to a backlog which we cleared early last year. Now, I'm talking clearing the backlog, but it is those applications that are compliant. The applications that are not compliant, for instance, the required documents have not all been submitted, or there may be one or two other things that are not actually satisfying with the requirements for applications. we take up to 90 days to actually accommodate this. But what we've done also is we've decided to move away from accepting each and every application that comes through, even if it doesn't have a private organization. That has helped us to not take the blame when people say, I submitted an application in 2005, and after now I'm not getting that. That can't be. So we reject applications that are obviously non-compliant. Where it's a small issue and we could not determine that the right thing would then accommodate. So, and that has helped in terms of removing the admin debt. And then we've launched the Registered Communication Drive in November last year, and this seems to have had impact in terms of the quality of applications that come through. They're now better understanding by the contractors as to what they mean when they apply. And we have established for the first time provincial offices in partnership with the Provincial Department of Public Works. We call these provincial offices the Construction Contact Centers, or CCC for short. We have already established four, one in Kaohsiung, one in the Eastern Cape, one in the Western Cape, as well as one in KwaZulu-Natal. We are left with five now. The first four were established in the last financial year in those provinces. The rest of the provinces will have theirs during this financial year, and that will be done with the Construction Contact Center the way we have engaged one office per province. Now, I need to just say that what the honourable members may be going to different provinces later on. The partnered approach is structured in such a way that the provincial department will provide the premises, and CREB will employ staff, have furnishing that office, and have IT infrastructure. We use high-tech facilities there. We have video conferencing, for instance, so that if you want to run a workshop, you could run it from one center and broadcast to the other center that it will actually get, because it would be live. So if you do go to these provinces and you find that people are complaining that there's only one office, we've already told them that there's one office coming from a partner approach, but the Department of Public Works there could actually have satellite offices that will feed information to this established CCC so that we work at this So this we did so that people don't rush to Pretoria each time they have to query their registration have access to India. We have signed MOUs with various people who are working with quite a number of people who may be signing MOUs with us later on. The workforce group, the people that are based in the Western Cape here, but have a national presence, we signed an MOU with them. They will be training our grade one contractor specifically, but it could even move to grade two and three. The individuals who must actually have knowledge about the industry, and perhaps they are not actually looking for to establish companies as such, but they are actually looking for a job. So this is actually helping what they've started with a number of attempts to have people that they can train and provide the names of the contractors where the individuals have to be trained. We've recently signed an MOU with FNB for the first time, one of the big banks. We've spoken to other banks as well. We're hoping that in due course other banks will sign MOUs with us. This is intended for the development of contractors. We've requested FNB when, during the signing of the MOU, that they must look at construction a bit differently from other enterprises because it has its uniqueness. And they actually took that part, and we're hoping that working together would actually demonstrate that there needs to be a different focus on contractors. We've had more than 40 cases investigated by the CREB where contractors were involved in fraudulent cases. We have an investigating committee that looks at studies. We have a forensic forensic investigators who are assisting us, and the system is working very well. There are contractors that are already barred from registration in CREB. Fines have been imposed, and we will then go out and publish the names of these companies so that people can see that if they get involved in fraudulent activities, we do take action. And it costs money to actually follow this line of action, and we would actually need to support. We started during the course of last year, and already we are used to the system and working very well. We also have a fraud reporting hotline. A lot of these cases have actually been exposed because of, or partly because of the fraud reporting hotline. Very quickly, going through the simplification of the registration process, we've always promised that we will do this. What we've done in terms of regulation amendments, we've separated grade one from grade 2 to 9. With respect to grade 1, we already have this targeted. What we've done is we initiated an over-the-counter registration with no registration certificate. But the certificate is actually becoming a source of fraud. Some people will actually go to the extent of manipulating the text on the certificate to demonstrate to the client that they're registered. Clients don't have to look at the register when they're concerned that we conducted the register. They might go to our website because it actually information that is available at the time when the adjudication process has to be concluded. And therefore, it's not that the certificate that may, where a contractor may have been suspended already, and you look at the certificate and you look at the issue. So this is actually live information. If the contractor is suspended, you'll actually see the system. We want to do the same thing, by the way, with the great system. We've taken away annual updates, which was quite enough mean burden for us. And so in the second and third year, no annual updates have to be provided. But this also means the annual fees don't have to be provided. We believe this is good for the contractors themselves. Grade 1 contractors would normally go and borrow 250 rand to register the staff. And when we remind them via SMS that they must update their registration, they will start asking, but where do you think we get the money? We haven't got a project so far. So we believe that it's actually helping also in terms of poverty alleviation, because these are the people that still need to be trained as individuals as opposed to being contractors. But we felt that it's good for them to speak the register, for them to get used to a regulated environment. This grade 1 level is actually linked to development. The National Minister has committed itself to, for instance, using EPWP and OOP to assist in the development of contractors. We are talking to various public sector clients to actually do the same, and this concept has been well received. But obviously they need to understand it, they need to be smart about it, so that this is not seen as ring-fencing projects which national treasury will be against. And this, by the way, is working so well now that the contractor will come in, register with us. By the time they leave, they have a note that says they have been registered, pending activation of their registration on the system within 48 hours. So these contractors do not come back every week to us to check if they have been already, but they don't need that. And within 48 hours, they will actually see that they are there. When you look at grade 2 to 9, the amendments are out for public comment at this stage. Just a few highlights. We are intending, through the regulation amendment, to remove the registration certificate. As I said, it's causing a lot of problems. A lot of people have been suspended because they are tempted to forge certificates. We are intending to remove the bank rating because this will simplify the process. When a contractor estimates that he or she qualifies for a grade 6, their accuracy will improve when there is no other factor that will manipulate the outcome. So once you remove that, I will feel that it will be good for both the CLEs as well as the contractors. We have adjusted the upper tender limit to respond basically to inflation in the construction industry. We come to the steps. I'm not going to deal with all of them. I'll just highlight the specific areas. As you may see there, I think we don't have the classes of work. We have general building, electrical engineering, etc., etc. But if you look at grade 1, as I said to you, want to separate grade 1 from grade 2 to 9 because grade 1 do not really contribute to the contracting capacity as companies. If you remove grade 1, you then remain with 9,292 registrations, which makes sense. It was around this time we felt we have between 8,000 and 10,000 registrations. So you can see now that because of unemployment in the country, a lot of people then decide to register companies with the hope of getting on something that will lead to having a place on the table. But what they need is actually income as opposed to running a company, which is more sophisticated. So in all these slides, you'll actually see that grade 1 has been highlighted. What we're trying to illustrate is that each time you need to actually consider them to be only outside, although they are inside and being part of the regulated environment. I believe it actually helps with when they start moving to grade 2, they would actually have a better understanding than if they were not there within a regulated environment. This just illustrates also that we have over 50,000 active registrations at this stage. This slide is just here to illustrate to you that there's been this exponential growth within the CREG. This slide may not give you an accurate picture towards the end, but as you can see, we have points that relate to December of each year, and then we decided to expand a bit and have April as well as December. December 2008. So it's been expanded a bit, so it doesn't show you that steep line that we are using. But what it shows is that in December 2004, we had 1,500 contractors. That's when we had just started the pilot effort being run in the Bofo Public Works, led to those registrations. And then December 2005, 7,500, and then December 2007, 65,000 registrations. We use this graph to project where we are going and also capture the actual figures once we've gone through that point. This one shows by different provinces high-level information by grade, and you can see how many registrations each province has. And again, if you want this information, we actually customize it and it comes up like that. But what we'd like to indicate for three slides is that you can customize information and see black-owned contractors only. And therefore, clients have an opportunity to see how they can actually assist in terms of contractor development when they see a picture like this. And what we've done there is we've looked at the medium-sized contractors from grade 3 to grade 6. And you can begin to see the numbers there. 80% of them are actually black-owned. This one, women-owned, by grading, again, it shows where the gaps may be so that clients can begin to decide. In our province, we do not have women contractors who are at grade 9, so we use that as an example. Therefore, it's no use going out on tender and asking for grade 9 women contractors. That is a preference for them. But if you don't get them, you get the others so that the civil project can continue. This last one, in terms of the customized information at this level, deals with women-owned contractors in mechanical engineering. When we look at specialized areas, you can then begin to see that black-owned contractors, the numbers begin to change. Women-owned contractors, the numbers begin to change. With respect to youth, I don't have a slide here, but we can create a slide like that just to demonstrate to you what is happening. I'm not going to go into the provincial slides. There are quite many. I'm just going to scroll down, and what we've done with all of them is we've highlighted anything that's got to do with grade 1 so that you can see the actual contracting capacity as coming from grade 2 to 9. Continue with achievements. These ones we've presented before, but we're adding value to them in a different way now. That's why they are here, and I believe it's actually a good foundation so you see what progress we are making on the basis of the things that have already been started. We've developed a code of conduct, which is already incorporated in the UCT curriculum for construction management. We want to expand this to other universities as well as other areas of the building environment, because it's about CREG and so crucial for the project. We have established a standard for uniformity, which is modified every year depending on whether the regulation amendments are effective. This has already been incorporated into the UCT's library of resources, and again, we want to expand this to other academic institutions. The program called IRIS, I'm hoping that one day you would actually have an opportunity to present to you about IRIS, because it's such a crucial program where we have a number of parties getting involved. We work here with the National Treasury, with the Department of Public Works, obviously the CREG, and then the DBSA. We've already made impact. In future, we'll be presenting numbers that show this impact. Previously, CREG has already indicated that we're making impact to the tune of between 26% and 29% because of, or largely to IDIS. But what I want to say is that we will stop doing that at CREG. What I've requested to happen is that IDIS, all the partners, must actually determine how the impact is going to be calculated, based on what, and then we all report accordingly. Information that comes from IDIS, so that will happen going forward. We've developed the 2010 procure manual, which has assisted the host city to procure services from contractors to build the area. We will use the same manual to assist in terms of the road network infrastructure which is due to be federal grant. We've done client capacitation workshops, and we approached to have the client capacitation workshop accredited so that the registered professional could claim CPD points as part of their continuous professional development. And this has happened, which is quite a milestone and achievement for the CPD. We, by legislation, have to have a stakeholder forum meeting every year. We have to facilitate a process where different sectors of the industry nominate representatives to be available as members of the stakeholder forum. After about 3 years of not having any stakeholder forum meeting, we have successfully held one last year in June. We've distributed the report to stakeholder forum members, and we will be engaging with those stakeholder forum members to work with us in terms of achieving certain objectives, their own recommendations, as well as the recommendations that come from the next bullet point, the 5-year independent review of the CRDP. Again, by legislation, the CRDP has to have at least once every five years, an independent review of its activities to see if it is progressing well or an organization that is not relevant and it has to be closed down. The report has been published and is available for public consumption, and the report has been handed over to the minister in December 2009. We also have produced a number of publications. So go through the highlights here. If you need more information, you can deal with the study later. I'm just going at this pace because the chairperson gave me permission to basically cover all the important aspects, and then when it comes to questions, we feel that it actually helps when you've got the same quality of information. If you want to ask questions, that your questions will be based on the same collection that you are taking, as opposed to maybe not having that shared the kind of information. You'll remember that we presented last time and said the CRDP and Public Works commissioned a study on the steel for infrastructure delivery in South Africa. We then concluded that process with a report which has generated a lot of excitement in the industry because it comes from the industry. So that report is available. Also, we have produced the State of Municipal Infrastructure, which deals with various elements, but that has been the foundation of support to what we call the Municipal Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy. We also have the building and construction material sector with a report that has been issued on the state of materials supply in the country, and that report is also available. Health and safety is such a crucial element, and I know wherever we see people are beginning to ask who is going to look after health, who is going to make sure that the contractors or the construction industry is very sensitive to environmental considerations when the infrastructure is being implemented. So this work is in progress, and we're hoping that in due course we'll actually be able to come back and tell you that this is the amount of work that we've done, and these are the achievements, and this is the impact we've been able to. The CIP has produced, and this is according to legislation again, the construction industry indicator. We have produced a report that shows construction industry indicators, and the intention here is that it must be industry that is able to interpret, see opportunities, see where the constraints are, let them choose how they actually want to participate in the industry. Now, the CII, as we refer to them, expose various kinds of information. For instance, the performance of the contractor, the defects that happened over time, the quality of tender documents and specifications, and we show the statistics that indicate to what level things are progressing or not progressing. The issue of safety and then delayed payment. As part of IDIC, the one that I spoke about before, we conducted research among various provinces to see how the delays were actually caused. We decided not to publish a report out of that. We refer it back to IDIC so that the technical assistants who are helping the Department of Public Works and Department of Education, as well as the Department of Health, to actually see how they could then begin to speed up the process and to confirm if the information was accurate. other problems that did not have the technical assistance. And we will in due course then release the findings and the concerns that have been put in. What is exciting is that during the course of this month, on the 21st of May, to be actually either in the morning or in the evening, we will be launching through the Minister of Public Works we will actually be launching this in May on the 13th, that is next week, during a breakfast launch, the CII. And again, the focus is on our intervention. And then we also produced the quarterly monitor, I think we're on the second one. And this has information that is very relevant to industry. You remember well in 2004 we published the status report of the construction industry. It was a big document that was stretched over a long period of time. What we decided to do now is not to wait for the long time for the information has an expiry date. We want to respond immediately to industry and share information or things that happen so that people can then take appropriate decisions. So the quarterly monitor will reflect various aspects of things that are happening in the industry. But what is interesting is that we'll even go to the provincial level to see the state of contractor development. This is being presented to provincial HOPs, so the impact will actually be seen later to contributor projects. The NCDP, which we've spoken about, we will actually see what impact this framework is actually having and what assistance the provinces may actually require from CIDP to make sure that the air contractor development programs are actually aligned with the CIDP stroke national department framework for the NCDP. So I think there are further interventions to be made than they will be made within the contract. Again, in terms of the quarterly monitor, this is the information that we're now beginning to present. What we're looking at here is just two classes of work. That is general building, indicated there, building, as well as civil, which is actually civil engineering. Just the two classes of work, because those are the most populated. Although civil engineering would be a bit specialized, but it's just these two that we decided to focus on. And this will, without going into detail, will actually show in terms of the public sector contracts, which depend, by the way, on the range of projects, which we are trying to actually give support on so that the information becomes more accurate. So if we show you information that's related to that, the competitive environment as well, and looking at grades, specific grades, categorized as you see there, and then black-owned contractors, you be able to see between grades 2 to 4, what sort of facilities black-owned contractors, we're talking about 5, 6, 7, 8. And then, in terms of the upgrades, I indicated to you before that the system may just show you we've got more than 3,000 upgrades, but it doesn't show you the details of why the upgrades are happening. So this is the information that we'll try and contextualize it. And therefore, here we're looking at real upgrades. In other words, a contractor has done work, completed it, came back to the JLP, got to an upgrade, and they moved up. As opposed to those that submitted non-compliant applications in the first place, and then we think, in terms of performance improvement, there is quite a number of documents that we want to publish. One is contractor guidelines, and this will lead to quite a big publication that will have the different sections that you see intended here. So that it's almost like a Bible of the construction industry, profiling the construction industry, giving guidelines as to how people must actually form companies. So this deals with the establishment of the construction business and will actually illustrate the risks that are involved. How to operate a construction business, executing a construction project, because you know a lot of our contractors, the making sector, will feel when I've won a 5 million rand project, the 5 million rand is mine. And it's not like that. When you tell them between 5 and 8% roughly, that they'll make as net profit, provided it comes at the right time. If it comes too late, it's normal that so that's why we emphasize the issue of delayed payment for the client. We are facilitating the client to pay the contractor on time. The benchmarking class, the launch with respect to the state and province will actually be going A. We are progressing well on quite a number of activities that relate to phase two of the register. Phase one was just taking care of the basic minimum in terms of registration. We did not introduce what other people see as barriers. But our legislation requires that we move ahead and go into phase two, where we're going to look at various issues, for instance, and the best practice contractor recognition scheme for the contractors, as well as the best practice project accreditation scheme for projects that are registered by SAC. The issue of health and safety, quality and environment become emphasized then within within phase two. Another interesting aspect, the National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy, when I made a mistake last time, and I said the Minister was launching this, so actually this one, not the other one. The strategy for NIMS was actually approved by Cabinet in order to happen. And between that time and now, there's a lot of work that has been done. But what is interesting is the structure and the levels that are involved in terms of demonstrating that this is being taken today. Cabinet is involved and a presidential coordination committee, I think will still be established, and then the Minister of Public Works, say the Minister of Public Works, program steering committee, which will be established when this is launched on the 21st of May. And there will be an advisory group coming out of that. And then program management. We're working together with the Department of Public Works to handle program management. At some stage, we were actually thinking that the CREG would program manage it, and therefore it would change the structure. Going forward, we may actually find that we clarify the rules differently, and maybe the CREG may be responsible for program management. But at this time, actually, call program manage between the CREG and the public. So as I said, the launch will happen either in the morning or in the afternoon of the 21st of May. That is the day when the budget vote will be dealt with. Just moving towards the end of the achievements, and by these achievements, we're not just giving you a lot of information which does not affect the budget. We're actually trying to give you a foundation upon which other things that will happen and things that will actually need funding are to pay for. We now have a new audit committee that started operating in the middle of last year. We also have a new board appointed by the minister in December 2007. The chair and deputy chair were actually appointed and confirmed in February of this year. We have also established or constituted the subcommittee of the board. What we've done is we felt that perhaps things have become a bit complex in terms of the amount of work that has been done. So what we decided to do is to do an induction on the audit committee as well as the board. For the board, it's actually legislated that we must do it, but we felt it was very crucial to actually have the two, the audit committee as well as the board, participating in the same induction program, which ran over 2 days, one in February, another one in April. So we have completed that process now, and I believe that we've got good support, we have very good individuals that will actually support the CREG going forward, and we're especially glad to them. I spoke about the development framework of the CREG when I was dealing with the specific mandate. You can just remember what I said there, and this slide basically shows the different bubbles that illustrate very important elements in the industry. All of them are important, but at this stage, we see that they are being driven to a large extent by the current boom in the industry. Growth is actually pulling all the assets, but remember, as we have growth, we also have opportunities. For instance, if you just look at performance, and empowerment. We need performance from service providers. We also need to take the opportunity to empower those that could not participate in the maintenance of the economy. But we need to have a critical balance between the two. We cannot say it must just be performance and we leave the opportunities, especially with the hype of 2010, people feel they could not participate. because of the deadline, the tight deadline that we had at the industry, but also because in terms of structure and everything, the timing of the CRED getting involved, the timing of the Soccer World Cup, we're not actually working hand in hand in terms of everybody being ready at the same time, but we actually moved at high speed to make sure that the 2010 Soccer Manual was actually prepared to assist in terms of equipment. But because of this growth, and we were estimating until sometime last year that the industry needs to double output in the next 10 years. What we're seeing now is actually we're moving between doubling and tripling output in the next 10 years. And this is based on the fact that 2010 will not be the end of the boom in construction. For various reasons, our lifestyles have changed all over the world, but more specifically in South Africa. A lot of people actually do not have access to services, and you need infrastructure in order to do that. And practically, if you look at the expenditure on 2010, it's a very small amount compared to the total expenditure for infrastructure in South Africa. And you need contractors that are already involved in one way or another in current projects, and more specifically the 2010 project, to also get involved going forward. Otherwise, we may have to rely on provided by people from outside. But if you look at all these parts, they are all important. There's growth, there's delivery, there's performance, there's capability, there's empowerment. All of them need to happen in such a way that each client must prioritize whether the tight deadline and therefore performance and delivery would be more critical, but without leaving out empowerment. They may then structure in a very transparent way how empowerment must take place. Capability must be promoted. And you'll see note on the slide that demonstrate what each bubble will illustrate as an intervention from CRED or facilitated by CRED working with the department. It's very crucial that we actually begin to market this in such a manner that people understand that they have flexibility within their context of operation and making sure that where CRED can assist us then to do that. We have challenges. Growth comes with challenges. The current boom in the industry, while it is an advantage, it also has its negatives. For quite some time, there has not been training of artisans and professionals have actually left the industry. Some are misplaced in South Africa, others have elsewhere. The skill shortage on the demand side is very acute. Skill shortage on the supply side is very acute. You find clients sometimes stealing from a user and stealing people who are waiting for contractors because they need somebody to help them on the other side. You find contractors stealing from clients, so it doesn't help with a lot of situation. We need to go beyond that and try and increase the supply of the skills of clients. Still listening. Moving towards the end somehow. Power generation is a new one. We've seen complaints about Eskom. The approach that we've taken with CRED is that we'll engage Eskom and we'll set a meeting for the 19th of this month to discuss with them to find out how we can help them as opposed to, you know, just complaining and adding to their enemies. So that process will take place. In fact, the board will be involved in that and to get to CRED. The unprecedented volume of registered contractors continues to pose a challenge, but as soon as you say grade one out of the picture, you then have a picture that we can actually handle. But you can't throw away grade one completely. You need to actually provide support. We need a regulated environment. It's actually easier for what the means of the contractors are doing. Unemployment in the country is creating a problem. The growth of the volume of grade one comes mainly from that. And then obviously the shifting priorities within the country. There's an emphasis on poverty alleviation, for instance, but then how does it impact on the development framework that we're talking about? We need to consider these things all the time. Continuing with challenges, the structure of CRED as an organization that operates from Pretoria, it's an organization that has provincial presence. And again, dealing with the specific areas, where people go to our provincial offices may have certain expectations that may be dealt with there in a different way if we work together. An element of the rail is always the construction tractor. The construction tractor, for those that may remember, is still on section 12. We need to move to section 9. We are engaging with the Department of Public Works and the Minister to make sure that this process moves forward. It's not that the Minister, the Minister is starting the process, but not that she's the one who has to approve it. It actually has to be done through PCI. But it was felt that the Minister could actually ask critical questions that would help in terms of simplifying the process. That has happened to some extent, but the last two meetings with the DG and the Minister were actually cancelled at 11 hours, so there was a lot of engagement and insights for all of you. But that is coming. We are developing a revenue model which is focusing mainly on the registers and what revenue would come from that to actually ensure long-term sustainability and functionality, while understanding that certain projects may still be funded by the department. We're talking long term, as you say, we rely on the department for that. We're establishing partnerships with people, organizations and stakeholders. This is how we had a meeting with them where we decided to incorporate in certain ways. We have a number of meetings set up. CDE, we're working with them. IDC, we're working with them. Abimo Board, we're working with them. These on various projects that affect the CRD in the social contract registration, I'm not going to talk too much about that. I can say the registration process is always simplified. Every year we have regulation amendments, but we want to move towards now amending the Act itself to take care of a reduction in the number of regulation amendments that happen every year, especially if we want academic institutions to begin to teach about the NG, because it could create a crisis all the time that along with the change of the regime. Project registration. We had relaxations that were expected to run until the end of until the 15th of November last year. That was the standard pending the the gazetting of the regulation amendment that has gone out for public comment. Now, we need to reprioritize this because we need to generate funding from the project. So it's very crucial for us, and again, it will cost money, the consultative process. We would actually take quite some time and money, and we need human resources beyond what the CRD has. We'll continue with the public sector procurement reform. The rate of professional service providers, the new register that will come on board, say, in the next 12 months or so. IDs that I've mentioned need to be extended to municipalities, and we're talking about 283, 284 municipalities with a pilot in touch. We need to do it because the benefits that we've had with the provinces will mainly be extended to the municipalities. The National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy, although at this stage we feel the roles are clarified in terms of what we see, there may be a change in the role of the CRED and the budget as well if most of the work would have to be done by the CRED. We're not sure. So the point I missed here is compliance enforcement. I told you that the direction is changing from that of an enabler to a larger extent to that of an enforcer to a larger extent while continuing with the enforcement. Phase two of the register that I've mentioned, quality, health and safety as well as the environment, they need to be emphasized. We need to either come up with an accreditation process or a process where this will be a requirement for registration in the future. Benchmarking class, human resource development. As an organization, CIED has started focusing on HR development. We need to come up with ways and means of retaining our staff. What we find is if we destabilize the structure, it takes a long time to actually continue with the delivery. We've emphasized the internal audit process to support risk management and corporate governance. And again, these will be emphasized going forward. And both will ultimately reside within the office of the CEO because they are of such a high importance. Electronic document management system, we're moving in that direction in order to make sure that everything is actually captured on our system without using hard copies all the time. So it is a project on its own. The fact that we haven't done so far, sometimes we feel, it's a bit too late, but it's something that we want to prioritize during the course of this year, provided we have enough funding to continue. Project database, another very crucial project, we are project driven, we are knowledge driven, therefore it's very important to understand how much this project is costing us, what are the elements of it so that we avoid duplication, for instance. Looks like the list is very long. We are going to focus on disseminating information around skill, contractor development as part of the National Contractor Development Program, working with the Department of Public Works. We're rolling this out to the provinces. The new construction conduct centers, remember we've established four already, the other five, we need to fast track these so that by the end of the financial year, we also have all the provinces with the triple teams. One of them will not be a fully fledged office initially because the numbers do not specify that. We're quite careful about how we are supposed to have two of them. We need to phase in value add through the triple team. Again, we can talk about the details later on. The field report in particular, I'm mentioning this because the report is there, it has been well received. We need to disseminate the information that's contained there and also in the process of what the Framework for Employment Skills Development Agency, ESTA, is being facilitated by the CNED, but it's an industry agency. Okay. We're working with the CISA in terms of skills and identifying areas where we can cooperate and where these areas of education will actually decide how we can do it. Presidential of government projects, the allocation of mass schools is participating in that, although it's led by IDT. National Skills Development Strategy, we participated in developing the national strategy. We support to the DRC, we are quite involved in that. They actually expect the CNED to visit them on a fact-finding mission, and therefore, because it comes from the highest level in the country, we cannot say we don't have money and we can't do it. What they want is that we assist them to form a CNED for the DRC. They've already visited our friends. The meeting, for the visit to the DRC has been postponed. We'll continue to support give our support to the NYS. Stakeholder forum, a very important element, and what I just want to say here, with everything written there, is that we've held our first one after a long time, in June last year. We will be holding another one this year between August and September. We just have to appeal to ministers to which day should be available for us. We need to then start a process of the nomination of a new stakeholder forum member. And that will actually facilitate through the board as well, so that they actually say yes, the membership of the civil forum does represent the industry. We need to capacitate our organization, both in terms of employing relevant numbers of staff, including the extension to the facilities. We also need to focus, like I said, on HR development. Service quality, we need to improve on that, and for the first time in quite a number of years, we've restructured the registered department. We are emphasizing staff training so that the quality of service can be consistent. We need to improve our management system to make sure that we don't continuously employ people, but we also make sure that once we stabilize on the numbers, we improve on the system so that efficiency will be a benefit to everybody. And obviously, stakeholder management and liaison . This slide highlights the performance measurement which must be submitted to the Auditor General together with the annual financial statement. On your slide, on the slide there, you might have in the third column, phasing out of triple C and replacement with triple C, actually phasing out of health debt and replacement with triple C. That's the change that's been made. I indicated that our structure should begin to stabilize. We cannot continue to employ a big number of people. It's just that we were very conservative in the past and we ended up with a qualification last year because we did not have enough people to actually respond to the requirements of the business. We decided that we must do it, although we're still relatively conservative, but we feel that we need to beef up our capacity in terms of there's a challenge on me. We're working with the department, but we believe that we have clarity soon as to what specific rules we have to explain. The rate of professional service providers is coming on board. We've finalized the consultative process. We are now getting ready to consult anticipate the comments that they come through. We will start preparing the regulations and then begin with the pilot and then roll out. In terms of current approved provisions, we have 112. Based on the new business plan, we're projecting about 151. We will actually formulate a resolution for the board just to make sure that we have backup around this one. In terms of the business approval process, we are about to get to the budget. I feel that we need to highlight this because we need to illustrate what process we follow this time around. We had a presentation to the old board in October, early in October last year, of our business plan. There were certain comments that we were supposed to include before submission. So we did that. We interacted with the Department of Public Works in terms of progress review, which was done in December. And then we updated the business plan between February and April. We felt that the budget that was allocated was smaller than what we had requested. So we made a presentation to the department indicating that it's crucial for CRDP to actually engage in the new project, and without the extra funding, we would not be able to do that. So we then set a special motivation, and our motivation has been well received by the department, by the way. What it does is it reduces the amount from the originally requested budget from 103 to 101 million rand. What they had actually given would result in about 71 million rand, and straight away we could not be able to operationalize the project. So as I'm saying, it's a well received, and we're waiting for the budget to work on the census name and when we'll update that as well. The submission of the tunnel business plan to public works has actually happened. We're waiting for that for 5 minutes. Then we get to the budget. The budget doesn't have a lot of slides in terms of the numbers, it's just 2 slides. We've made certain changes with respect to the copy that you have. I'm just going to highlight here the areas that we consider in terms of this we need to build human resource capacity within the CRDP. You may remember that in the past we relied a lot on consultants. We will still rely on consultants for specific areas, but what we need to do is to make sure that we capacitate our own staff to begin to do that. We need to establish the last 5 construction contact centers. We need to improve value add at the construction contact center, and we need to improve the registered service delivery. The restructuring of the CRS for efficiency is one aspect, and already we are seeing a benefit that is coming out of it. The means in terms of staffing, we actually have accommodated in this budget the basic minimum. If we have to do more, we may need to actually have more people assisting in terms of we need to facilitate continue to facilitate the establishment of the ESTA, and this, by the way, is not expected to be a CRDP thing, as it continues to be. But the facilitation is happening through the CRDP, and we actually require money to actually engage with the rest people. Phase 2 of the register, where we talk about policy, health and safety and environment, very important project, and something that must actually be fostered. The promotion of the research agenda, we're working with academic institutions to see how we can actually kickstart a process of retaining students there so that they have qualifications in the built environment, making sure that the lecturers actually stay in the university, even if it means they do other projects as well to actually sustain themselves. So what's happening is it's very easy to take lecturers from universities and get them to work for some of these big companies, and therefore you never have somebody at university to teach the answers that they're looking for. We are getting academic institutions to begin to teach CRDP requirements. The University of Cape Town has already started in terms of construction management of Unit 1. All the major universities that have that offer in the built environment need to do this. And it is a challenge because they tell you we don't have money. But what we will do is we'll motivate industry to participate, but we may actually be required to provide this money. Benchmarking with international bodies and benchmarking class. We need to compare ourselves to others. We actually were very conservative in terms of registered personnel as well as financial management. We did not have enough people to actually respond to the economy. If you look at the Malaysian model, they actually have more people looking after the account of contractors. We actually feel fitting when we benchmark, we actually make sure that it's important. But going beyond that, in terms of other projects that we have, the benchmarking team will actually assist us in terms of benchmarking with the best in the world. The continued support to the 2010 World Cup infrastructure procurement will continue to do this whenever we are required. What we find is that there's little knowledge available out there, also demonstrated out there by the public sector side. When we get involved, we can assist them in terms of smoothing out the process and making sure that they will not be challenged later on by the flood process. The electronic document management system is a project that we want to clarify, but depending on how much time we get, we believe that we should be able to define the budget. There are two slides talking about the budget. If we can just focus on that, you'll see if you look at 07-08 and compare that with 08-09. I'll deal first with 08-09. In terms of organizational income, we generate revenue basically from two streams, that is say, the transfer payments from the Department of Public Works and the fees that come from the register of contractors. In future, all registers must actually generate revenue costs. So at this stage, that's the register for the register of contractors. What we're looking at there is the register which generates projected 26.5 million rand. And the department, we're expecting the department to transfer 75 million. That would result in total revenue of 101.6 million rand, which is projected to be to be spent as follows. In terms of personal expenditure, and this is where we have different figures from what we have. 37.479 million for personal expenditure, administrative expenditure, we're looking at 32.6 million, 559. In terms of capital expenditure, it's 11.240 million. And then operational expenditure, 20.3 million. Again, resulting to the same 2006. So these last four figures, 37, 32, 11, 20, have actually been changed because in terms of the spread and how costs were allocated in the past, we changed that and forming a new base, but going into the future, you can actually begin to see the trend. So we've modified this within the organization. The second slide, we have had figures changed as well. We're betting with the allocation of the budget, and I must state at the outset here that we found it quite a challenge to compromise on very critical projects just because we don't want to be unreasonable in terms of the budget that we're requesting. While we're getting money from the department, huge component, and then relying on only the registered contractors, we may be a bit constrained. It was so difficult telling problem managers we can't have so much cut down. But we believe that we can work with this budget going forward. We'll actually ask problem managers to reprioritize their projects so that we can deliver on our team. What has happened then is the Office of the CEO, which includes the communications component, we're looking at 8.8 million. Corporate services, financial management, 29.657 million. And this is almost fixed cost. We couldn't cut on this one. All the things that must be done, if you come up with that budget, then we actually have a cost. Not things that way. Growth and contractor development, we're looking at 25 million. Construction industry performance, which will actually drive the new direction in terms of knowledge and information. We're sitting on 8.9, and we actually needed about 2 million rand more than what we have there, but we believe we'll actually begin to roll out the project. Procurement and delivery, we're looking at about 10 million, and then registered 19.2. And again, registered as well as growth and contractor development where the need is. This is our service point. We drop the service level there, contractors is complaining, clients is complaining. We must make sure that we keep up both data capacity as well as data, there's a lot of information that must be made available out there, driven mainly by construction industry performance programs, but also procurement and delivery in terms of publications that must be made available so that they understand what the CRED is doing, what it's doing. But what we do is we provide a framework and provide flexibility to stakeholders to do their things within their means. It cannot dictate to people that things must be done only in this way, and they can only blame us for lack of doing. It's been a long one, but I appreciate your attention. If there are questions, we'd like to take them.
Madam Chair, I want to thank you for this call. Madam Chair, I've got so many questions. I have to leave at 12 o'clock. No, I will not take the chair. Thank you.
I just wanted to check whether the NAPAD bring that project, or else you can show your opinion. And if you not snap up the project, how do you do that with snap up? Because I have a family of some of them have got to come from their country to South Africa. But if, for instance, the similar initiative of the ARCI could be seen as a different pilot country to extend it to other countries to look for the pilot, you know, that might address some of the countries that they are going to do that. You also made mention of the setback thing about 65,000 active construction companies, and you said the rest are subsidized. I just want to check as to whether perhaps you can elaborate on that situation. I was not clear. Just to remind you, for instance, about the challenges that they won contractors are confronted with, given the bulk of those companies in that trade. That you may find one, the challenge of the industry as a result of them able to meet your specification in terms of meeting your requirements. As well as perhaps you are able to assist in that or that. But also, you know, CEO, one has made an observation that given also that conglomeration in that level, you find a situation whereby I might be given a job this month and complete that job. And that job might have taken me to say that I qualify for this. But you know, sometimes, especially one reason or another, I discover that I might not be able. Certain few requirements that I could have met in order to qualify. But because I'm not able to get the next job, 2-3 years after. As a result of that, now I might say that it is, I'm even now losing the points in terms of this meeting. Certain points that I have scored in terms of this meeting your requirement. How do you deal with that challenge? Last one is your contractor development program, whether it has been up to the National Department of Public Works Incubator Program. Because you need also to ask whether you are talking from the same wavelength, or else the department is head of the board. This is not there, this is a program, this is a program. But if it is not in enough in your own program, instead of it is that if it is one way or another, you might be talking from different wavelength. But if you are not, if you are talking to the quality, you have to tell me that it's welcome.
Madam Chair, I will not be asking a question because it started 40 minutes late and I have a slightly better. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Comrade Chairperson. The person would like to join Comrade Matuma in appreciating the report.
Yeah.
But what I was concerned with the one aspect which the CEO highlighted here, in particular when coming to the issue of that 6 years down the line, the CIDP could not develop any historical disadvantaged company into 11-9. That one is starting from the chair because what is if you can look at the key mandate of the CIDP is to provide leadership enabling regulatory and development framework. The LC rightly acknowledged that we have reached a boom in the economy when coming to the construction industry side. So if we are not going to be able to develop these contractors now, when are they going to be developed? Because if you can look at the slide which was dealing with the women owned companies, in particular the mechanical engineering part, from level 6 to 9, from level 6 to 9, there are no women companies there, well, it's zero. So it means that if it is like that community, it will mean that what the president said, that it is business as usual, all the heads must go on deck to fight poverty and bring change. Really, we expect from the start of the CIPP to pull its weight around so that it can do that. Why do we say that? Because when you look at the skill development, it is not only because of people are lazy. It is also historical. When the other people were getting first grade education, others were getting Bantu education. So unless with these projects which are driven by government, we bring change, or unless we make these companies also to empower the other companies, just like these big companies, as they end up with these projects, they go as they did. Murray Rowers to come and adopt Kotongwane and Mdaum to be partners so that they can get higher points. But at the end of the day, we don't see that translating in the development of Kotongwane and Mdaum. So I think that the CIPP can do more on that particular regard, in particular taking the issue of cost development. And then also on the budget side, we see that there was the issue of R&D, research and development. Unless that aspect is really raised up to the required level, this development cannot come in. So in the future, our person would expect that in the budget, there must be some sort of allocation for R&D so that we see that we can have this development. Because we must be looking why is this temporary. Because I don't think that the CIPP is doing justice that it registers the contractor, registers the project. Without analyzing the information we to form those registers, how to improve these people so that they can qualify for this for the highest rating. So on the other issue is the issue of fraud and corruption. Yes, it's appreciated that we're having that. We are seeing that they are receiving our certificates, and then it means that all the information is going to depend upon what we are going to get on the website. But we know that there are hackers now. Like someone can go and hack into a website and put his information there. Are there any precautions taken that such things don't happen? So if the other issue will be the issue of the register of project itself, I can see that we're having only the register of contractors. The register of projects. We've got massive projects now. Very massive. And then they run into billions. So if we don't have such a register, how is it going to generate more income, CIPP itself? Because I'll be expecting that actually this appropriation which we're having for the CIPP, I think it's too minimal for the mandate which is required of them. So I think that they must be more expansive, but they must justify that. And then the other issue which was raised during the portfolio committee during the week is the issue of the information of children. It came very sharply, but I appreciate that in this report you also indicate that there's a shortage of skills. There's a shortage of skills. Those skills are not, it's not something which just occurs overnight. It's structural. As I said, the band education, like children could not learn mathematics and science, so we cannot expect them suddenly to be learning large numbers at university. So what is the short term which you are suggesting in the skills practice? Thank you,
Chair. Chair, I must first congratulate the CEO and the new board, and particularly on a great improvement on the performance of CIDB. And I remember at the time when we were not even quite sure what the CIDB was doing, but I think with the improvement of the budget, when we approved last year, the budget which was double, now I think it's actually bearing some fruit, and perhaps, I mean, I can say they need to be really congratulated on that. But I think as the CEO was speaking on a number of areas, I realized as well that even amongst their own representation here, there's not even a single woman. What does that mean? I see the zeros, there are a lot of zeros there, and I think in their representation as well, I see a zero as well. So, I mean, does that mean in this, I mean, we know construction is a male-dominated field. Does that mean it is the same even in CITP, whereas they're supposed to be trying to deal with that? Perhaps maybe my questions may have been, some of them asked by Comrade Martin, but I'm interested to know, I remember some time when the CEO was here, there was controversy, if I may put it, around the many CCCs in Gauteng. I see now we're talking about one, and I want to check whether that has been sorted out. I mean, you're not mentioning many CCCs, you're mentioning one, and I would want to know what happened to those, and has there been any improvement around that? The other one is the issue that the CEO mentioned that some other applications are rejected because of non-compliance. Do you just reject them? Is there anywhere where you refer them for assistance or advice, you know, or it's just a rejection and you look forward, you know, to the next one without assisting that one or referring application for assistance so that that person can actually comply. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just heard my colleagues now complaining about the women not being very much visibly present. What is happening with these youth, especially the youngsters whose parents can't afford to take them or send them to universities or other institutions? Do you have any projects where you have youth organizations per se involved in order to empower the young people? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. I think the context which has increased, the context of transformation and living there. I think it's one should well be kind of a public ability to be a transformation mode within the context shape for the growth. I think it's too much of an invocation of the but we talk about people who are youth centers. And we raised a very critical issue about the state of development. So I think the institution is given the circumstances of the country and the capital of the country. It is in the institution of the law. So I think we need to take a point to address this issue and not relate to not talk about why people who are accessible to take a vote but in the same way. I think we should also look at the particular issue of the process of the truth. There are other issues that qualify for a higher grade. But we get from both of these issues. But what else I'm looking at the movement, you know, where we look at it, and when.
We can't hear you, Ken.
I just want to highlight a few things of saying that we need to fast track the induction program that we have promised. I know it's been difficult, the members have been very busy since the beginning of the year, but we actually wanted to do it before the time. Perhaps what we need to do going forward is to agree on a tentative date when this can be done, because it's going to respond to quite a lot of questions. I think in terms of the Malaysian model that I referred to, benchmarking when it comes to specific activities would not happen with respect to the Malaysian model. Mm-hmm. When I refer to the Malaysian model, I was talking more as an example in relation to the number of staff that they have within the finance division, for instance, the number of people that we have within the division, that's one number of competencies. But when the construction industry performance problem presents to you, they would actually illustrate various things, benchmarks, I think, organizations in various countries. You could go to a country, for instance, Malaysia might not be the best one when it comes to benchmarking on a particular activity, but some other countries are doing. It's interesting, we actually went to Australia recently to look at various things, but impacting on the work that the CIP is doing. We could benchmark with Australia on certain things, and we learned quite a lot, which is being implemented already. We learned quite a lot in terms of various areas where we don't have to go to Malaysia. But the CIP is actually based on the Malaysian model to a large extent. The developing model that we're talking about was found to be very relevant. But they operate differently. They generate their own revenue. The way they do it would not be applicable to Sarawak. So we should be sensitive around the reasons why the benchmark has been accepted. But what I would like to do is I would like to allow my colleagues to respond to specific questions and then I will respond to
Thanks, CA. I can just respond very briefly to the comment around what has the CIDB done to grow grade 9 contractors. And I think we need to look at it from another perspective, and correctly so, or understandably so, you have asked the question of grade 9, but possibly if one looks at grade 8, let's see what has happened. Within the past year, we have seen 8 contractors, building contractors, grow from a grade, probably grade 3, but in the band of grade 2 to 4, to grade 7 and 8. We've seen 6 contractors grow from that band grade 2 to 4 to grade 7 and 8, and these are real growths. It's not due to bringing tax certificates, this is real growth. We've seen 91 building contractors grow from grade 2 to 4 to grade 5 to 6. That's a significant achievement. We are looking at the reasons for them. I just want to highlight one for confidentiality reasons. We won't give the company's name, but in the presentation we'll make on Tuesday, we talk about Mpumalanga, where this one voting contractor in Mpumalanga in 2006 had an annual turnover of 2.7 million rand a year, and the largest contract, and I think this is a female contractor, and largest contract value of 3.1 million. She's currently a grade 7 contractor with an annual turnover of 38 million, increased more than 10 times. So yes, one does tend to zoom on a grade 9, but there's been very significant growth in many of the other grades, and I think the CIDB has played a very strong role in supporting that through the various mechanisms, mm-hmm. registration. Yes, in mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, special works, if you see the gaps, we are looking at this, we are developing mechanisms to encourage this type of growth, but there has been remarkable growth, albeit not enough. We certainly need more.
Just because Rodney has responded to this one, maybe I need to use just very important when we begin to understand the role that the CRDB plays and the role that others must play. The CRDB could not develop a contract for any greater interest. That's not what that's up to do. If you think about the development of a contract, you develop a contract when the project that is being to the contract and the CRDB doesn't do. What we do though is we provide a framework within which clients and service contractors could assist the smaller contractors to grow. I think because we develop this framework and we facilitate that the clients must recognize and use and create their model, the National Contractor Development Program, while we work with the National Department of Public Works to actually fine tune this framework. It's a framework that must then begin to talk to provincial contractor development programs so that they are aligned to the national contractor development program. But without the client and without their service staff, it wouldn't be able to do. We've been asked the same question by the senior officials within the Department of Public Works at a breakfast function. Why have you not created a blank statement contract? My response was, a wrong question being asked to us. We need to actually call black people and ask them, why have you not participated in the industry to become a great man? There are two issues here. One is we cannot make it artificial that we will not have a great man. Tough on this. Again, we should not expect that somebody will come in as a grade one, grade two, and be a grade nine in a short time. It will take time for project management on these projects is very common. We actually begin to see now something that was not intended by the CRDB, that contractors, once they finish the project, they rush to us to ask for an update, but they have not actually experienced enough in terms of project management at a particular level, so that when they come and ask for an update, nobody should say no. We must actually see that at this rate, this person has done so many projects, various aspects of project management. They actually deserve. That's why I was saying it's very dangerous to look at construction businesses as if they were, for instance, businesses where you win a tender to supply their jobs. So all you do is you add your markup, you know where you're going to get them, and you just become rich. Here, we need to go step by step. I, for instance, have worked with people that have been in the industry for 8 years, and they keep telling me something that it's quite complex. So there's that element. But to fast track that, there are a few strategies which are sharing the contract. One of them is to develop joint ventures. We can talk about that and debate other issues that are negotiated. Joint ventures will help. Start contracting under a big established contractor will help. One of the biggest ones, which I was actually responding to when I was talking about this conversation, is actually let people buy out other owners in companies that already have. That's what they will do with mine. They buy a company, for instance, that already has trade 7 or trade 8. I know some have money, but it would be easy then for them to do a certain number of projects at trade 8 and upgrade. But when it goes through the break, it's a challenge. You need somebody who can manage a business and do a number of projects at the same time, and they must have money. And these are challenges that the reality can't change. You can't change that. That people were not in the mainstream of the economy as such. All we can do is provide framework facilities, provide framework facilities. The role of the client and the service sector is very crucial. If you look at our logo, it says development to partnership, exactly what it says. And by the way, that has started happening in the last 2 years. We're forming partnerships now. We have people who sign arguments, we assist them, and we may not play a leading role in certain aspects, but we will push and facilitate. The issue of delayed payment, a lot of people may not have seen it as a challenge, but we saw it as actually slowing down the progress of contractors if they don't get continuous projects, if they don't get paid in time. And these have to be covered at the time and begin to actually change it. So I think our role is, well, at this stage, the CRDB requirements apply in terms of regulating the environment to a large extent in the public. The private sector is only involved when it comes to their registration of projects. But in terms of other areas. The minister has asked that perhaps we should start looking at the whole industry. Mm-hmm. The minister has also asked that perhaps we should look at how we can regulate the whole industry, including the home building, where the NHBRC is involved. Here, after the session, we have not even started to implement a lot of work that we need to do. We have not put it here as something that we want to do, but it was actually mentioned during the first meeting of our board. Actually, the board has asked what we expect within this first 3-year term of the board, and she just mentioned it. We started debating these things with her and saying, you know, if the NHBRC Act says they must regulate the home building environment, it would be a controversy for KRG to go in there without changing that act and modifying our act and making sure it's done. So I'm just saying it's actually vast, but it's something that we actually want to do. If we want to do. The only problem that we have is we cannot provide training, we cannot provide development of that, we provide the training.
Thank you. Our time deal with most of those that led to HDDP or conduct development and the triple C. First one, the question was related to, is the NCP linked to the National Department of Public Works Incubator? I think that answer is a simple and emphatic yes. In partnership with the National Department of Public Works, what we have done is develop the National Contractor Development Program as an umbrella program on all development programs throughout the country. That are run from national or provincial departments. It also incorporates PWP and any initiative, whether it be public or private sector, that contributes towards contractor development. So yes, this is an umbrella development program which encompasses and draws the strengths from all of these, learns from weaknesses, and actually in terms of staff analysis, takes into consideration all other initiatives that are underway. The issue on triple C's and satellites within provinces, especially with a big geographic spread. As Rani, our CEO, mentioned, the partnership with Provincial Department of Public Works was to set up one joint, almost head office center in each province, which we, in partnership through the premises with them, we then populated CIDB with staff and a whole host of resources, especially the information technology. And understanding that there's huge cost implications in this, in terms of resources and setup costs, but also operationalizing and maintaining over a period of time. We then, at that stage of partnership, said that yes, there would be a need in those provinces, especially with a large stretch, to set up smaller satellite offices, but the initiative would be, and the onus would be upon the Provincial Department of Public Works to resource those, and this head office in each of those provinces would actually act as a support function, guiding, training staff in those centers, etc. But again, the cost implications have not justified, in most instances, the province actually going ahead to set up of these satellites. Our managers and staff in those provinces do attend various functions and workshops in other districts within the provinces and try and offer as much support as possible to the provincial regional offices of public works. In the context of Gauteng, however, the one main office which is on our premises in Pretoria of the Triple C has been set up, and the Provincial Department of Public Works there has taken the initiative to set up another 4 satellite offices. And those offices are still functional, they still act as a feeder into this main office. Or main triple C, and they are called triple C's as well. Those staff are trained, and all of our resources are made available to those satellite housing triple C's. So that's an example of where the triple C has been set up with satellite access, and those are driven and resourced by Provincial Department of Public Works. KZN is likely to soon follow, and the Eastern Cape has also indicated that they are likely to set up satellite offices or give some resources towards that. There was a specific question in terms of the Northern Cape, where the geographic spread is quite large. In that instance, we have to find the balance between the resources that we put out into the province versus the number of contractors, as an example. So in the case of the Northern Cape, we have 300 contractors. Now, whether that would actually justify the spend for fully fledged triple C and putting out resources into, let alone one fully functional triple C, and then actually going out with a whole host of others, or whether we actually deploy resources when and you know, when required, we can actually from either head office or from Bloom, which is in close proximity, we can have also deploy resources there. But we are setting up one office in Kimberley as well. The issue on visiting the facilities, yes, Chair, most definitely is welcome. In the four setup provinces, our managers can be easily contacted. And we can set up opportunities for members to at any time visit these facilities, or we can do some kind of tour of a few of these facilities. In terms of the success rate of the facilities, I think first and foremost from turnaround times and improved service that has been delivered, these are already successes that anecdotally show that they are success from these pilot 4CCCs. But we had always envisioned the first 4CCCs would be almost a pilot for us to learn from before we roll out. And currently there is a study that's being commissioned to look at a whole number of reporting mechanisms and means and mechanisms of picking up success rate of the actual CCCs, which is also linked then to when you spoke of, or your question was on the principles of education and support programs that are being offered in terms of understanding the criteria of education. The triple C's also take upon themselves the initiative to send out the communication message of registration criteria. There's a campaign that our CEO spoke of that was launched in November last year of simplifying registration and making this information readily available, and the triple C's then act as the provincial contact point of disseminating this information, whether it be through various publications, the media, workshops, or from the CCCs directly, brochures, etc. And all of this is part of the communication campaign then to make this information more easily accessible to the contractors. Thanks, Chair. I'm here. I think I've dealt with most of the questions here.
Thanks, Chair. Any other?
Apology because my back facing everybody, it's impossible not to do that. Apologize for that. Just a few people. The important question about contractors that are graded, and for some reason might not get projects during the period of registration and won't maintain the grade. Just to share with the committee is that the mass of registration, the first mass of registration was in 2006, so after the act, registration has been valid for 3 years. We haven't yet seen the same mess coming and seeing whether they're maintaining the grades or not. But early evidence, and some of what we mentioned, is we're finding there is a high success rate among the first 3 years in Europe that are coming through in terms of maintaining the grade. But as they come through, we'll be able to see what the level of contractors are actually having difficulty maintaining those grades. The other issue regarding grade one, just to pick up as well on what Yanov said on the point of grade ones as well, just to share with you that from the 1st of January, with the first regulation amendments that were approved, the grade one registration was simplified, and the application was made much easier to a double page application and with a over the counter, and easier procedures in terms of the annual update as well. That is still no longer required. Also, cost saving from the CIDB side in terms of, you know, we produce the mass of legislation, 80% of the companies actually able to produce shorter forms. It has a big cost savings as well. Regarding suspensions, there's various reasons as to the act and the regulations that actually require the CIDB to suspend contractors for reasons of failure to perform the annual update. The contractors do not come forward and confirm the procedures annually. Not renewing your licenses that are statutory, like electrical licenses and test clearances. And also the CIDB investigation committee actually sanctions imposed in terms of breaches of the regulations. And those carry the supplementary suspensions. And some of them are suspensions for a period. And some are fines. And thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. What I think I should do then is to just go over the questions, those that have not been responded to or add to the ones that have been responded to. Perhaps I should actually start with the comment that there is no lady within our I actually gave an apology for Mrs. Ingram Sunderland, who is actually having it not really in the secretary, so she couldn't join. So we have a lady within that structure. But we also have ladies driving very critical projects that are mentioned here. One of them, the fields development, is actually driven by a lady by the name of Debo Rudolph, who would actually be able to present to you at the time when you scheduled. She is playing a very critical role, and we basically allowed her that space to be creative, and there's a lot of value that she's adding. Another one is Kabelo Tifa, who is involved with IDIS, our most senior representation at CIDB to the IDIS partner and engagement. As we speak, I think she's actually in Simo, the only person that actually handles IDIS from our team. We are planning to increase capacity. Another person, whether it's going to be a lady or not a lady, I'm not so sure. In terms of what's happening in the construction industry, I think we need to actually put an effort. But can I tell you that we've seen very interesting improvements. More and more ladies are getting involved at a professional level, as well as artisans, as well as just people working in a road construction project. We've seen more ladies getting involved. We should also understand that there is a political environment that we need to deal with. The facilities that are provided at construction sites, the language that people may have used there over decades, that needs to change. The facilities must be introduced. If you see a group of men on a construction site, the employer might not provide a toilet, for instance. But when you have women, things must change, not for the ladies only, but also for men. The application may actually lead to unacceptable standards instead. The language that people have used over years, swearing at each other, just blaming, that would have to stop. And the fact that men may talk about women in a very negative way, they would have to stop that. So there's a lot that must happen that may actually drive women not to be comfortable in that environment. But we appreciate the comment, and hopefully next time we'll have more women. By the way, the former CFO was a lady. End up with two ladies, but we wouldn't have to see both. Maybe moving into the questions that have been asked, our interventions are the NEPAD link. We believe that when there are these government interventions, where, for instance, the president may decide that must be done, and the minister will then say, CIDB, these are the issues that relate to construction, CIDB must be represented. Therefore, we participated. When the Cubans were supposed to come to South Africa, although it goes beyond the understanding of NEP, CIB was expected to be involved and participated as we said in terms of crafting the agreement that ended up being signed. Although we did not participate in the interview process itself, but we did participate. Our chairperson actually went on a CDE ticket at that time. So there's been that level of contribution. We went to Brazil, we saw models that were quite attractive there. We are beginning to then suggest to the minister that we may need to set up a company that will absorb graduates so that they get trained through a government institution. Because what we saw in Cuba is that they would not complain about people not getting exposure. Public Works, by the way, a long time ago, would actually be a training ground for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not happening anymore. And we go back to that, it's a contribution to society.
Mm-hmm.
So we will discuss it with the minister, perhaps at a level where it would not be recorded, but it's what we believe should actually be done. Because department or government cannot keep saying people are not being trained.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got an avenue that we could actually create.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about an entity that could generate its own profit. That it happens in Cuba and Brazil, an entity that would compete with the big companies in the country and elsewhere, an entity that would be sustainable, and an entity that would easily become a great man. But we need to do this very carefully so that it's not seen like it would be favored by any government department because it comes from that. We're looking at something that is actually very competitive. So it's an avenue that believes we could actually have. But to respond directly, any NEPAD initiative coming from government requiring CIP intervention or assistance, we are considering. To me, specifically the DRC is one of them, but we also got requests from contractor registration bodies in Africa to ask CIP South Africa, to affect CIP South Africa, to the CIP Malaysia, to start talking carefully with CIP with prevention. We have asked that we hold the first meeting of these bodies in Africa, in South Africa, and we're planning for that to happen around in July. I'm just waiting for a response from them, but as I said at that time, we've been too busy since this year. So I believe that's how we would respond to that. In terms of the R&D budget. I actually appreciate the honourable member that is not here anymore. I actually appreciate from all the members that have actually seen that the budget of the CLEP needs to actually be more than what we see. But we also want to be very careful about the things that we promise and when we're going to deliver. The budget is also measured by our capability to deliver on these things. Where we feel that the capacity is not enough, we rely on what we call the outreach team. We have consultants that we train to understand CIB requirements. It's a very delicate process. We can't just get a consultant, even if that consultant has a degree in civil engineering, just say, you're going to help us the CIB to do ABC. It doesn't work like that. They need to be familiar. We need to brief them about how we do work, take them through the process of our act and our regulations so that when they begin to agree with them, it makes them better. So, yes, we believe we need to get more money. We could actually do specifically well in terms of the research agenda because we need this funding for the university to make sure that the students who are studying there can proceed beyond a junior degree to a master's level, to a PhD. We need the universities to actually have funding so that lecturers can stay there, look after the students, because it's something that's been lacking for quite a long time. And last year during the stakeholder forum when I mentioned it, they were so excited they actually came forward and said we can actually assist. What we need now is around June we'll actually be talking to the universities to see how we can actually start this fund that would help students who are there, but also to make sure that we give a comfortable environment for the lecturers to stay at the university. Because once they've been taken by industry, you have a void in university. We can complain about lack of professionals until come home. But if we don't address the issue of where they get trained, who trains them, are they of the right material to train them, and we'll never fix the problem. So we're excited about this, and we are actually engaging universities already. We've established very good contact, and it's going to happen. I'm not going to respond to the issue of fraud and corruption as it relates to our system. I think that's in terms of income, we currently generate revenue from the register of contractors, but all the other registers are expected to generate revenue. Just that with respect to the register of projects, there were certain issues. We then suggested they move to a paperless system just to encourage them. So the problem to get them to then begin to pay when they did not budget for it. During the course of this year, we'll be engaging with them, talking with them, indicating to them that they need to now start budgeting for this. So the income that we need, but we also have something very crucial to demonstrate. We need to demonstrate failure. If we cannot demonstrate that, we're going to have a problem. But we also need to look at a different way of achieving quality. I think what we one day will actually present to you a model that was actually needed some time to where certain percentage of the value of the project would actually take care. If that happens, I can tell you PRD would not have to ask for money from the fund. But the challenge is how to get that. Something that we're going to be talking to clients about, we're going to be explaining about the concept until it can be implemented. But it is exciting to report to it. Importation of Cubans, we're involved in that, but I think it's more like our involvement in international skills development. The reason why we went to Cuba was because of that element. We participated in the development of the national skills strategy and we looked at the whole value chain, starting from secondary education to university, then professional registration where this applies, as well as continuous professional development, where you know they attend courses from time to time and get what we call decision point. We look at the whole value chain. We need to involve the Department of Education because otherwise it's in the middle. I'm sure that at some stage then in our engagement we can also talk about the business school strategy, which has been presented to the HOC development. And by the way, what we've done there is we said anybody who comes from outside South Africa into South Africa to go to a skills shortage must actually be matched with another person or a number of people that must learn from them so that when these people leave, they actually leave something for the South African who did not have the opportunity to operate it. The issue of non-compliance of applications, I just wanted to contextualize it a bit. The CID, we don't reject applicants. We would rather recognize them as grade one if we something that is short. But through the CCC and our registration program, we actually advise them as what to do. For instance, if they need to have sponsorship in order to attain a particular grade, we actually advise them either in writing or when we communicate with them verbally that the form of sponsorship that they may actually need could be from an overdraft facility or they could do this or that. So that it's up to them to commit themselves to that kind of sponsorship. So we do advise them, we don't just tell them we're not complying that. Actually, the CCC, the value adding the CCC is not just the registration itself, it's actually a registration and advice. So there's a lot of discussion that could happen around issues that are identified by staff. In terms of the participation of youth within the CIDP, it's amazing. Most people who are actually working for the CIDP are very young. We have not many people that are not defined as youth anymore. I'm talking about youth going up to 35. So in terms of that, yes. But in terms of the question that was raised specifically, a part of youth that may not have had opportunities or may not have support from parents or maybe coming from parentless communities. I think as CIDP, we have a limited way in which we can do that. But what we do, as we always do, is to partner with others to make sure that that support could actually come through. Through the National Construction Week, we actually sensitize students in particular. And CIDP would actually run its own program. What we decided to do is not to do a one-week thing. We decided to partner with other people, the workforce group that I mentioned. What we plan to do is then to actually visit schools in a province maybe one or two tenants, depending on how much they can cope with, depending on how much they can cope with. But we also have participated in the NYS, the employment of 5,000 youth, in terms of developing the strategy and the implementation thereof, although we can't do it ourselves. We've been part of the National Department of Public Works process to ensure that we can. I think perhaps we're talking more of bursary than financial support. At this stage, CRDP is not offering bursary to do that. But going into the future, what we're thinking of is to sensitize industry so that we can, as industry, begin to support. But there are people that are offering bursary from the building company. I know the company I used to work for, Nino Chen. Anybody who works doing civil engineering and qualified to that level would actually be supporting. A lot of other companies are actually doing that. But perhaps it's not enough. I think you may know already that the University of Cape Town has, I think, recorded a number that we've never seen before in terms of either the Department of Civil Engineering. People are beginning to be aware about this, and I'm hoping that the students who don't have financial support will come forward, especially if they don't have talent. The Register of Professional Service Providers is a sustainable contract. It's one of the registers that the CRDP is mandated to establish. The CRDP is mandated to establish two registers at must. In other words, we must establish those. The two active registers right now, the Register of Contractors and the Register of Projects. The other registers, the CRDP may establish them. The first one that we've identified is the Register of Professional Service Providers. We've consulted widely. We actually went back to the region advised by the board last year. We just concluded that the consultative process. Everybody is waiting for this. They are supportive of it. Nobody has shut it down. They were asking particular questions about the operational side of this. So the concept has been well received by industry. So it is sustainable. They will be paying fees. We have not determined at this stage as to how much they will pay, but it is a very sustainable thing. And in terms of presentation on the construction charter, I just need to mention one thing. The CRDP is not leading on the construction charter. The minister actually added me to the charter group because she felt the contribution of the CRDP financially and non-financially to the processing of the charter. What is happening, we want to avoid that because there are contractors who may have issues with CRDP at this stage in terms of the registration process. And if we are seen to be leading on the construction charter, they may shoot down two beds with one spoon and cripple off. So what we have said, and this is what I've said to the charter group, is that they will lead. I will come in as an additional member of public works to actually support the process. I have facilitated the meeting with the minister, because the Section 9 code, based on that presentation, the minister asked a question which could not be taken forward. We have then modified the approach, as I indicated before, the meeting with the DC and the meeting with the minister could not take place because of the emergency bills that the DC and the minister had to take care of. But that process is going on. We are hopeful that as soon as possible we'll be able to gazette the Section 9 code for construction, because if we don't do that, we will then revert to the generic code, which do not address the specific issues relating to construction. I keep emphasizing that construction industry is unique in a number of ways, both in terms of the development that must take place, the way the business actually happens, what some of the contracts may be long-term, and there may be changes taking place within the life of the project, as opposed to, you know, other things with tenants. So we are looking into that. So the danger is people are contractors, big contractors, are already beginning to use the generic code. And that would actually cause confusion between the two. So we want to actually speed it up. The minister, by the way, has actually reached into the charter group and to support the company. That's a matter of finalizing that we've been taking the process forward. But what I will do is I will request an appointment with you and the charter group to actually be able to pick them. And then the issue of performance and delivery, I'm taking it more as a very positive comment. That slide on the development model, of the CLD is very crucial. Sometimes you find that, you know, some clients will say we need more capacity to be involved in their appointment without checking if they can do it. So when they have delivery deadline, they need to first look at what is the delivery mandate, who can we use, how can we support those that are actually participating. For instance, they must encourage joint ventures, they must encourage subcontracting, and they will have to provide people to make sure that these things are happening as planned. What we discover is that there may be an initial agreement, later on it's not honored, and nobody monitors what happens. The contractor has, or the small contractor does not benefit from the process and does not want to then work with the established contractor in the future. The established contractor complained that some of these people may not know what is in the contract in terms of their performance. And when they fail, the big contractor just takes over and says, we'll not pay you your portion. Small contractor says, but we agreed that I will get 25% of the money, which means even if I don't deliver, you have to get my 25%. So from both sides, we have this problem. They need to be handled carefully. The advice we've given when we saw that there was this problem was that clients must not force marriages between big or established and small contractors. It's very dangerous. We need the established contractors to identify contractors that they would like to work with, and then monitor as per their promise the projects that they've given, kind of skill transfer and development that has taken place. You normally come up with people that could work together going forward, knowing that there's trust. But when you force them on a project by project basis, they work with this one for 6 months, next month they work with another one, this one has been done, and doesn't know what's going to happen. Better when they have, for instance, 3 year, 5 year programs where they actually induce sustainable development and skill transfer. Women in terms of grade 2 to 9, this is a challenge. Can I say something that may have been mentioned before? This has led to corruption. If women don't want to be involved in construction, you can't force them. Where there are incentives, you end up with men that fictitiously include women's names so the women are still not there. So the picture you see can actually be challenged, but we can only rely on the information that we've got, especially when we check with people if those women are actually directors or partners or members in that particular entity. It is a serious worry to us because it's not supporting government initiatives to actually support women. So it is a worry to us, but it has led in the Bopo in particular, where they decided to provide more incentives for women-owned contractors. Almost every black-owned company has many women. There are some who women didn't even know that they were part of the deal. It just shows that black people can also come when they get the chance to have women in their businesses. The issue of NIMS, Rodney is here with us. He works with his counterpart at Public Works, what we call manager with this project. I do not think there is a problem with the NIMS group actually presenting to the committee. I'm sure that will be arranged with apart from the launch.
The launch is an email which we sent to launches on the 21st between 11 o'clock and 2 o'clock. So I'm not sure if some of the members here will be at that launch.
It happens on the private vote, so I think if you block the whole day, you actually have an opportunity to listen to some things. But I'm saying even after that, more the details we will be prepared to present. And then the last presentation on ID. Again, we would actually make arrangements that the IU team present to the full committee. We've done this to the joint MINMEC between Public Works and Education. A number of issues were raised. We are prepared to use the representative presentation to the full committee. Improved industry performance, I think somehow we've dealt with this. The issue of the model, we've dealt with this. There's the issue of language. I'd like to talk about this because it has been raised by members at certain stages. It has been raised by Bhutlake in Devon. We have another meeting in KZN. Bhutlake, by the way, is a development program linked to the Department of Transport. The issue of language is a very sensitive one, but we need to look at it within the right context. Google Drive has specifically asked that the application form for CIP must also be included for what is in the task. I was told by the MC there that it needs to be a point of the national minister to make sure that in KZN we understand that when they have to pass legislation, it must be at least in three levels, one of them is two. The challenge with that is the cost implication, the form for KZN must be earmarked only for KZN. But the more serious issue, if we modify the form so that it has something that is set in future, are we doing it for political reasons, political correctness, or are we doing it because it must be done? The reason is that in terms of construction, will never come into it, at least in the foreseeable future. If we do it so that people understand it simpler, the construction process and the factors are indicated are actually more complicated than the form. The form actually is very simple and continues to simplify. So if there's a serious issue because people cannot understand form, the triple C's are actually able to assist. Therefore, it brings me to the issue of limiting. We make sure that within a CCC office, there's somebody who is going to be interacting with the contractor that understands the language that is spoken. So from our side, we believe that in terms of saving money costs, that's the approach. But if we have to change certain things so that we address certain languages, obviously we need to sit down and discuss what the cost implications are supposed to be, what capacity. That's what I'm trying to say. But it's going to be a challenge. But I also want to make sure that we all understand that when we want delivery and we end up picking on some of these small things, we might actually not achieve what we want to achieve simply because we want to think about political problems. I'm saying that understanding that members here would actually be driving at the highest level as opposed to what we do. But I'm saying that let's consider it, if you actually want the issue of language to be addressed in the form, let's deal with it in a different context and understand why we do it. But we've already addressed it in the sense that anybody who deals with contractors in the CCC should be able to speak the language. We must have somebody that can speak the language that is spoken within a particular area. If in terms of the manager for the CCC, we don't have a certain name, people think belongs to our group, it's tough. Because sometimes the manager is chosen on his expertise rather than language. But what we found is that all those managers are actually prepared to come down to the level of the contractor, high and deal with everything. It means having two people talking to the same contractor to make sure that the issue of language is addressed. They do that. That was my last point. But I need to have a better comment.
Thank you. I have a quick comment.
The first one is fairly light related. You know, the question of women representation. Firstly, it's not the full board that is here. Cecil and I are representing the board, and I'm glad to be doing so. The full board of 13 people comprises three female board members, and they are quite active on the board and willing to participate in the subcommittee. The second point I would like to raise is that the next board meeting, which is taking place end of this month, for the end of this month, the board is committed to identifying priority issues for the board, which will definitely be driven by the budget plan that is presented to this particular committee today. Amongst those would be a peer. Certainly one of the priority areas would be a commitment to research initiatives, and not research in the esoteric sense, in the pure academic sense, but applied research that would certainly help the industry. And it's been very beneficial for me sitting here today to hear the concerns of members of the committee, because the board would definitely be taking up these issues and assisting the CIDB to deliver on the budget plan. Just as long as you also support us in getting our budget. Thank you much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, Madam Chair and honourable members. It's really been an honour for us to present to you our budget. The always challenging budget that has kept increasing, but we challenge us today, and it's very crucial for us. And we believe that if you have your continued support, we will actually be able to make it. May I thank our board members who are here. I think for the time that I've been coming here, we've never had our chair of university work also had another commitment presenting to Parliament, and perhaps the first year we could actually do it on its own. But I think from now onwards, we'll actually have representation from our board. The committee itself. Thank you to everybody, the related team from CLP as well. Thanks for lunch.
We need more time. Thank you. So you could know this is Peter.
Thank you very much for everything.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Because I think, where do you stand?
Okay.
It's also here.
Yeah.
So I was saying maybe we can drop a report together.
That's so much effort. Because I only need to do the first two things.
Yeah.
You can come pick up from now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't really need to stop after that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as far as drawing up the whole report.
Paper, everything is working for you. to take on. You can copy one function.
Photocopy?
Yeah, we just need a copy. Yeah, part delete and hopefully my car is not gone.
There's an empty chair. Yeah, a definitely here.
Yeah, a lot of difficulty. Another question.
You are also in for me. This was a big unknown when I submit this question. I really want to do it.
Yeah, don't put the one that you want to
do. So you can submit one, you can submit one, then you put it in this document. And then this one will cover all the documents. Is that the end? Put everything inside it.
And yeah,
this one thing can pull it in that you feel you just write a free old name on it. You got the CEO conduct itself, you see?
Okay, you got it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
So I'm going to take a copy. What's his name? You want to call him? Yeah.
You want to call him, yeah.
Get into construction now.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm
like, because
they didn't use
me anyway,
you know? He's been saying this before.
Yeah, I can come now with him. No, it's a problem.
He's going to use me.
I need a woman. At least I'm being honest. No, I'm going to use you. You're going to get me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to eat together. Yeah, on the phone. The woman in the company is the director. Yes.
So I don't know.
Then you partner work the field, and on the document you own 50% of the company.
On the document?
I didn't do anything.
That's not the world works.
Yeah.
In reality, I think that's the
world.
Yeah. In reality, you just want to say, that's the world. There's nothing corrupt about what I'm saying.
It's
just
not
a fun.
That's not
everything.
There's nothing
that
corrupt.
As long as you're able to read the figures and you see the accounting. So, the company is doing wrong. No. The company is doing wrong. Do you want to do it? Do you want to do it? Do you want to do it?
Are you going to
the
Eastern Cape
just
for the weekend?
No, I'm going to... Something happened in the family.
Oh, okay, so
you
don't
know. I wanted to go anyway, but now I don't know.
Oh, you didn't go last week?
No,
yeah, I didn't go last week.
I must be using the tennis in the language.
You
can
get that?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So
that's nice being here.
Copy of this, go home. You can't do a copy for myself? there's not any, that's how it's written. I take the, I make a
motion. But I'm asking one thing, making a short question.